Good afternoon. This is Katarina Koliva, the Executive Director of the Council of Deans of Health, and I'm delighted to welcome this afternoon four of our student leaders on our student leadership program. And I am very pleased to have with us Fatima Mohammed, who's a newly qualified midwife, and she was on our student leadership program in 2018. And then Kenny Fakir, student mental health nurse first year, and he's on our 2020 cohort of the student leadership program. Equally delighted to welcome Margaret Chung, student art therapist, first year postgraduate, and Alicia Burnett, student midwife, third year as well, but she's also a qualified nurse. So welcome to you all, and thank you so much for joining us. This is part of a podcast series at the Council of Deans that talk about BME issues in higher education, in academia, and obviously today's perspective is very much the student perspective in that. So I very much look forward to hearing your views. I would like to ask you first for your personal reflections as a student, but both as a professional, healthcare professional, on Black Lives Matter. I'm going to go to Fatima first.
Okay, thank you, Katarina. So my personal reflections on Black Lives Matter is I'm really sad it took like all these decades to finally get an anti-racist movement going. I feel I'm really, really relieved and happy that finally we are having this worldwide conversation about our own biases and justice and dignity. I'm just really sad that it took possibly centuries to get to this point. And I'm sad that it took not just George Floyd and Breonna Taylor's deaths, but so many deaths to be swept under the rug to get to this point. I feel cautiously optimistic. I don't feel like we've ever been at this point before. I feel like something has changed in the air. But like the Egyptian Revolution, I really hope that it doesn't fall back to where it started again. And I really hope that there will be a true force for change. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Thank you for that. And shall I move to Alicia? Your reflections, Alicia, and if you want to build up on anything that Fatima said, feel free to do that as well.
My personal reflection upon the current uprising of the Black Lives Matter campaign is that for what for many people is a revelation, for many people that look like me, this is nothing new. And now you have been invited by way of a very tragic and unjust event, you have been invited into our pain. You have been invited into what it feels like to be victimized just because of who you are and what you look like. So, strangely, this is almost a positive outcome that now people are listening. Now people are self-reflecting. They are looking inward at their own actions and how they maybe contribute unconsciously sometimes to the oppression, the victimization and the discrimination against people of colour, specifically Black and brown individuals.
Thank you for that, Alicia. Kenny, your views.
Firstly, I would like to thank you for inviting me to take part in this podcast today. I should like to say that the Black Lives Matter movement is a movement that resonates very passionately in my heart because of some of the experiences I've had in the past. And thinking and reflecting on the death of George Floyd, you know, did resonate how important this topic should be addressed by the people in position of authority. It is very sad to see and to hear that people have to pay the ultimate price for human race, especially the Black and Asian minority ethnicity to be heard. I think personally, it's a very sad and dark moment for me as an individual because he shouldn't have paid the ultimate price. And despite the fact that he was really begging for his life, I think that's the most disheartening thing for me. And that is what touched me most about this movement. Many people have lost their lives, sadly, just because they are advocating for what they believe in. However, we should not underestimate, or we should not forget the impact, the statement George Floyd made about, "I cannot breathe. I cannot breathe." Sadly, humanity has lost its nature. Nobody should be subjected to what happened to George Floyd. So at some point, I take it personal because I'm a black person, and I feel that if George Floyd was a white person, he wouldn't have had that outcome. And I think it is important as a student to begin to reflect on how we can, or how we might, look at things from student perspective, and how we can begin to change the narrative for not just black people, but for human race. Because I don't see that movement as only black movement. It's about human race. And what we should be talking about is humanity, not only Black Lives Matter, because we are all human, irrespective of our race. I think we should begin to talk about the subject of humanity.
Thank you very much for those powerful comments, Kenny. And I can see a lot of nods. And obviously, a very important point you're making there is that these are humanitarian issues. They are neither political nor just societal issues. They are beyond and above that. It is about one race, one human race. Yeah. Margaret, I will move to you now. Your reflections on Black Lives Matter.
I think my personal reflection is that I find Black Lives Matters, it is a very, very important issue and a very timely for us to reflect on, like, the deep-rooted social inequality. But I have to say that I share the feeling of this being a very sticky and difficult issue that can bring in feelings of shame and guilt, because I think I'm thinking from my own perspective and possibly putting my shoe into my client's perspective, no matter what ethnicity background they are in, because it's not easy to admit the oppression that's happening in our daily life, even unconsciously. Because as a training art therapist, we study about intersectionality, and we study how hard it is to have that mixed feeling of frustration, guilt, and anger, and fear, and shame, and acknowledging that we are simultaneously the oppressor and the oppressed. I think Black Lives Matter, as a social movement, really brings in those messy and sticky conversations. Like in this podcast, we're able to create a space for each other to feel safe and feel comfortable enough to talk about all these. I think that Kenny made a very good point about it being a very humanitarian issue. It is about the equality that's needed to be put up front in education, in healthcare, and I hope to see a sustainable rise in the bar of awareness of social inequality and social injustice in general. And I personally, coming from a more culturally homogeneous background, I think I myself have so much to learn and unlearn.
Thank you very much, Margaret, for bringing back to your own profession and making that metaphor about how the Black Lives Matter movement actually is relevant to everything you do, both as a student and as a healthcare professional as well. Fatima, you want to reflect on something that Margaret said there?
Yes, I'd like to reflect on something that both Margaret and Kenny said, commenting on humanity. I think it's so profound and so important that we do highlight this, but also how capitalism has affected our views of humanity and how capitalism has made humans, the human race, expendable. And we see this symbolically in George Floyd's death.
I will move now to Alicia, and I'd like to ask you, Alicia, what have been your experiences as a student midwife and as a BME student in your university and in practice? And also, if you also wanted to bring this to the context of COVID-19 and students' role in that.
I love being a student midwife. I love midwifery. I spent the first 2 years of my course very happily ticking along until it came to light via the 2018 Embrace report that in the UK, black women are 5 times more likely to die during pregnancy and in the postpartum period. Asian women are twice as likely to die, and women of mixed ethnicity are 3 times as likely to die than our white counterparts. That was a momentous moment for me. It opened my eyes. Up to that point, I'd been really enjoying myself. Everything was great. Everyone was great. And I realized that things aren't as rosy as I had perceived them to be. And I suddenly found myself, I'm no longer just a student midwife. I'm very proud of my black heritage, but then my black heritage became more pronounced. I am a student midwife and I am a black woman. If I was pregnant, I would have poorer pregnancy outcomes than my white counterparts, and that I had to do something. I had to learn more. I had to read. I had to reach out to people. I had to network with people that have been doing the work. With regards to COVID-19, I have to say that sadly, the statistics again for black women in particular are even worse. During the period of between May and April, 55% of pregnant women that were admitted to hospital with COVID symptoms, COVID positive or query COVID, 55% of them were black or ethnic minorities. That falls in line with the findings that BME peoples are more susceptible to COVID-19. They are more susceptible to mortality in relation to the COVID-19 infection. And the past few months have just been a whirlwind, and action is needed. Those are my reflections, both as a student midwife and as a black woman.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing those so openly, Alicia. I'd like to go to Kenny. Kenny, you're a student mental health nurse, and I'd like to focus on your expertise around the mental health of students. And if you want to share with us your reflections around BME students and their mental health, both in the context of COVID and more widely.
Irrespective of the fact that I am a student, I will be looking at this subject from a general perspective, how it might affect people. Reflecting on my own personal experience, you know, for the first 2 months when the lockdown came into force, initially, you know, everybody was petrified because nobody knows so much about the virus. Hence, people were very, very apprehensive about how they approach things and what they do about it. So, from a student perspective and from a black minority ethnicity, I think the virus actually opened people's understanding to how healthcare accessibility and outcomes for black minority people is impacted on their well-being. Say, for example, just following on with the statistics shared by Alicia, we all know that black people, the mortality rate from COVID is twice as high from a white counterpart. And what is this? Why is this? We need to ask that question. And based on my understanding, I think it's all to deprivation, access to equal healthcare opportunity. And, you know, I did ask earlier if I could reflect on my own personal experience. And this is where it became very tricky for me to conclude that in actual fact, as a black person, I am more, the probability of the impact on me or my family or my ethnic group is much more wider than a white counterpart. And the reason is because from my experience, Back in 2013, I had an accident and I was rushed into the hospital. I had an emergency operation. After the operation, the consultant that was looking after me had some queries and he wasn't really sure. And he needed a second opinion. So he referred me to a white consultant. So my consultant then was an Asian consultant. So he sent a referral for a second opinion. And when I went for the appointment, the consultant asked me three questions. Number one, was I married? Yes. Do you have children? Yes. How many do you have? I told him. And he said, you're fine. You can go now. Now, that left an impact on me. And I realized after 7 years that was actually racism. At the time, it did not occur to me that it was being racist because of the color of my skin. Now, coming back to your question, there are lots of Black students that will not come out if they have some personal issues that relate to ethnicity and racism because they already know what the outcomes will be. So the question is, how do we change the narrative? What do we need to do to change the perspective of people in position of authority, especially around people of color? Because if I stand to challenge you, Dr. Katrina, about how you're relating to me, the first thing that will really come to the mind of a Black person is, oh, it's because I'm a Black person. However, that should not stop us from asking questions. That should not stop us from, you know, pursuing our personal ambition. That should not stop us from pressing further to get results about things that we have query about. So I feel that most Black people during this pandemic will suffer mental health issues because they are not able to come out to speak about it. That's number one. They are not able to access the help they need. And then they are not able to access the services they need to be able to address those concerns. So I'm particularly worried about Black and minority ethnic groups because it's the impact is not going to be something that will be seen very in the nearest future. It's going to be a long-term impact. And it's about creating more awareness. It's about talking about the subject. It's about giving people information about how they can access help should they need it.
Thank you. I think, Alicia and Kenny, you've given us some very, very powerful and important, you're making some very important points there. I just wanted to summarize my reflections back to you both. The importance of query, research, data, the importance of using the evidence to understand the issues. I was struck by when you said, Alicia, oh, it's only when I looked at all that data that my life and my perspective changed and I wanted to use that to make a difference. Back to Kenny, the importance of reflecting from your personal experience, being open about it and querying it again and say, this happened to me. Why did this happen to me? And in what context did it happen? And what does that mean? So I think in both your examples, you're bringing there the importance of asking the right questions, the importance of changing the narrative, the importance of positive movement and positive challenge to bring us to change. Margaret, I'll come to you. Would you like to share your experience at university, but also in practice and from your professional experience as well as a BME student?
Sure. So I was not born or raised in the UK, but I came to the UK to did my GCE undergrad and now to do my postgraduate. And I have to say, as an international student, although this is my sixth year in the UK, I still, it's still not entirely a smooth journey. As a foreigner, I face cultural and language barrier. And this is my first year being like studying and diving into the UK healthcare system. There are a lot of new things that I have to learn. And I moved to I'm in the East Midlands, so it's an entirely new place that I've never been in. The demographic is different. Student and ethnicity ratio is different than where I was in the South before. I think all these contributed to my awareness of the struggles, the challenges that BAME students live.
Do you feel there that you are very different to the other students? I think it's very important the point you're making about this is not just about race and ethnicity. For many people, it's beyond that. It's the wider area of culture, because it will be language. For some people, it will be religion and belief. For other people, it will be nationality. For other people, it will be age. For other people, it will be gender. For other people, it will be sexual orientation. So it's all of these things that we need to bear in mind when we talk about diversity, equity, and understanding of difference. I think you're making a very important point to say, yes, I am from a BME background, but actually, I'm also from a different country, from a different culture, from a different language. So it's all of these things piled up together. So Margaret, how does it feel when you realize that you are that small minority, particularly in a profession like yours, as you're reflecting, which is predominantly white students?
I think sometimes it can be a bit hard to feel like I get my voice heard. Although I have to say that my university and tutors are very understanding, and they try to make me feel like I've been understood. I feel like within the course, yes, it's not easy, because I'm learning a totally different culture and learning things that local people will find normal or common. But I think maybe in the wider university setting, it's because when people see you in university, they see your appearance. And I have to say, especially under COVID-19, as someone who looks Chinese, we still face a lot. I still notice a lot of funny looks and microaggression in the interaction. Although there are not many, partly because in the building that I'm in, there are really not many ethnic minority students, not to mention Chinese looking students. So therefore that social context really adds into people's interaction and how, I guess prejudice and bias and assumptions would build up from, you said, Dr. Katrina, all those little differences that builds up. I wonder how, as student leaders and how academic institutions can do a bit more to just educate students and staff, everyone, to learn to be more patient, and as well as asking the right question, to be able to listen to each other, to drop assumptions, and to really treat each other as an individual who knows their own life the best, and create spaces that can provide people with psychological safety to really tell their story and feel like they've been heard.
I'm really sorry to hear your story, Margaret, particularly during the COVID period, about how people made the wrong assumptions. Really, really unacceptable that they were making assumptions on the basis of how you look, in terms of the basis of risk and fear. But what I'd probably tell you, I hope that somebody challenged that. I hope that you got somebody to support you to challenge that. I hope you challenge that yourself back to those people. But more importantly, I think something we probably all share is the understanding that lack of knowledge brings more fear and misunderstanding and wrong assumptions. And I think what the theme that's coming out of this conversation this afternoon is the importance of using the evidence, querying, asking the right questions, doing research. We'll build our knowledge base to be able to challenge these assumptions, prejudice, biases even more. So I would welcome you to keep doing that, Margaret, and to call things out, as Kenny and Alicia did as well. Fatima, I'll come over to you if I may. I'd like to ask you what kind of role models you would like to see in academia and beyond, and in practice. And now you are obviously newly qualified, you're out there, you're working as a midwife. So what role models would you like to see? And do you see some good role models you'd like to share? Some good stories there in terms of diversity and embracing equity across the board.
Well, I don't think there's any such thing as one ideal role model. I think a range is great. At the moment, senior management, everyone who is superior to you in education and in healthcare, they tend to be white. I would say large majority of them are white. And unfortunately, for quite a long time, there's been a fear to even call them white. We've had to call them Caucasian because apparently they're above being racialized. It would be great to have more people of color, particularly black women, to be in management, because it's great to have someone that you feel that could understand you. So midwifery advocacy is a big, big deal. When I was pregnant, I really wanted a woman of color to look after me. Nothing against white people, it was just because she would get me and I wouldn't have to explain myself. And I'm tired of explaining myself. I'm a Muslim woman and I was 12 when 9/11 happened. I've had to explain myself so much and I'm fed up with it. I think what would be really great would be having the right kind of white person as well. I'm not saying that all of senior management has to be brown. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you have, the right kind of white person who is open about their, and understanding about their privilege, understanding about how it was easier for them to get into that position of seniority, and acknowledging their own biases so that there can be justice and dignity in the workplace and in the education sector. I've met some amazing midwives. I have met some not very nice midwives. I have met some ignorant people and some amazing people. And what I think it would be key was the education from a very young age. Education from a very young age and seeing, children are not naturally racist, but we are brought up in a culture and society that is racist, that teaches that white people are the superior, that they are better, that their lives matter more. And it would be good to have education that challenges this and that teaches that everyone matters and that everyone's humanity is valuable, even those who hate. It's really hard. Like sometimes, like you have to acknowledge that other person that's hating, that is protesting Black Lives Matter, that they have humanity that's worthy. It's really hard because they're acting in a way that disregards your humanity as a brown or black person, but acknowledging that they have a right to life and dignity as well. That's also important to teach.
My final question to you all, and I'll go to Kenny first. What change would you like to see in the university world?
Well, the first change I would like to see, talking from my own university perspective, is to see more Black and Asian minority ethnic group in position of authority. I would like to see more diverse senior management structure in the university and also in the workplace as well, because recently I decided to work as an HCA on the ward, and in the last 2 months or thereabouts, I haven't come across a male sister or a male matron. Why is that? Is there no male nurses in practice? There are. So, I'm talking from nursing perspective here. We need to see more of diverse people in position of authority rather than just white female colleagues. That's number one. Then number two, in academia, I think if talking from my university point of view again, in my department, there's only one female lecturer in that department. There are no male lecturers. There are no Black or Asian or other ethnic minority group lecturing in that department. And it is very important because if we have a diverse setup or a diverse system, we can be culturally integrated as a people rather than having just a selected few ethnic group. And I think this is applicable to many universities in England and in the country as a whole. So I would like to see more Black people having opportunity. It's about giving that opportunity to them. because there are some people that want the opportunity, but they cannot harness it. So how do we get people to know about such opportunities and how they can harness those opportunities? I would also like to see BME facilitators. Most education facilitators are white people. They would not understand what I will be facing as a black parent, thinking about how to keep my children safe. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here. So it is important to have that opportunity to, you know, to, I'm not saying we should specifically put out a role for black or Asian minority people only. I'm just saying that it should be more diverse, and the more we make it diverse, the more integrating it becomes for people, and in the longer run it will be easy to recruit people into the profession, because I look at it from that point of view as well. There are a lot of people who wants to go into nursing, but because they feel that they are not going to be able to cope, especially with childcare in terms of placement and not having the opportunity to have preference, you know, because of their circumstance, that is putting them away from enrolling on nursing degrees. And I think that can help the nation in the long run to, you know, to fill the vacancy that there is in nursing profession.
Thank you, Kenny. I think you're making a very important point there about how essential it is for us to look at diversity as diversity in terms of thinking as well, and diversity in terms of contribution, and diversity towards integration. So this is not just a tokenistic approach to say, oh, I need one of this and one of that and one of the other. It's more about ensuring that by embracing diversity in all its sense, and we do need in doing that to recognize that actually we do have a big agenda around BME in particular. And obviously you also mentioned another issue which is very relevant to nursing, which is male representation as well. And it applies to midwifery, probably doesn't apply to all the allied health professions in a similar way. So in some professions it's the other way around. You need more women than men, and in some professions you need more men than women. So it's about embracing all of that as a whole and not doing it in a tokenistic way, but in an integrated way. So yeah. Thank you for that. Alicia, what change would you like to see?
I'm going to bring it back again to the maternal mortality rates against black and brown women in the UK. So there is conversation around the idea that one way to combat the maternal mortality rate in the UK is to have a workforce that is reflective of black and brown women. So, for example, gestational diabetes is associated with poor outcomes for mother and baby. One way of managing gestational diabetes is to adjust the diet. If you're me and I have diabetes during my pregnancy, and my midwife is telling me to change my diet and eat, I don't know, dried apricots and things that are not culturally relevant to me, the likelihood that I'm going to comply with that advice, or the likelihood that I'm going to struggle, is greater. But if my midwife was from my culture and was able to make recommendations, so she knows the foods that I eat, so she's able to make recommendations that are culturally appropriate, that would improve the outcomes of black and brown women with gestational diabetes. So we need a diverse workforce that is reflective of the women that we care for, the women that are vulnerable, such as black and brown women. That begins with having a diverse cohort in midwifery education. The Race Disparities Unit have found that ethnic minority students don't fare so well at university. They have higher rates of attrition. They are less likely to get a 2-1 or a first. I am part of a collective of black and brown student midwives called Comidment. We offer mentoring services. We offer peer support. We talk about textbooks that we have used to support us with our midwifery studies. If there was investment in groups like that, peer support groups from leaders in healthcare, groups that are committed to increasing the educational attainment of black and brown students, that is one way to improve the educational attainment of black and brown students. So there'll be more black and brown midwives to look after the black and brown women that are dying. That's my first point. It's also incredibly important that we have allies, that we have people and women and midwives that are not black and brown, that are white, that want to improve our health outcomes, that are receptive to education and knowledge about us that will help you to save our lives. So at a university level, we need to introduce cultural sensitivity into the curriculum. For example, there is a birthmark that babies can be born with, which has been termed a Mongolian blue spot. This language, this terminology, if you look into the history of it, is incredibly offensive, incredibly, incredibly offensive, but it's still being taught. There is a correct medical term. There are two, in fact, correct medical terms for this type of birthmark, but I'm finding that it's not being filtered through at an educational level. For example, how to identify jaundice in a black or a brown baby. Teaching students that a healthy baby comes out is pink. If your baby is pink, your baby is healthy, it's well perfused. If your child is black or brown, the likelihood that they're going to be pink is very, 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 very slim. Teaching the future midwives how to identify signs of deterioration in black and brown women and babies will save lives. So it's really important to me that we make these changes. I don't want to die. I don't want my future children to die. So if we make these changes, we can improve those outcomes. And I really do believe that black and brown students need to be involved in these changes. It can't be that these changes are decided at a level where there are no black and brown people and they are filtered down, because they're not going to be effective. If you don't have the people that these things affect driving these changes, they aren't going to work.
You're making some very, very powerful and relevant points there, Alicia. Thank you for the depth of the issues and the breadth of the areas you've touched upon there. You are coming with a powerful and important point, which is diversity means actually public safety. It is about our health. It is about protecting lives. But also, from your perspective, diversity is also about education. And it's how we use education as the main lever to ensure that people understand those issues, so that we can not just save more lives, but actually make sure that everybody has a better life across the board. So thank you for those reflections. Fatima, I'm going to go to you. What change would you like to see?
I would like there to be education for those in seniority. They really need to be educated. I'm really still very angry and upset with them for disregarding my humanity, for assuming that I am subservient and that I am, I can be waved away, that I don't matter. I think it's really important that we cultivate an idea of dignity and that I really want there to be acceptance and believing of people when they complain about situations quite a lot of the time, people of color will actually question themselves first, like, oh, was that racist? Was that wrong? Maybe I shouldn't complain about it because it's going to bite me later. We need to foster a place of safety for these people. And we really need to foster a place where white people have the courage to stand up for them, because white people will listen to other white people. They have, unfortunately, the strongest voice to be listened to. I would like to know how many white people would tune into this podcast who are actually genuinely interested to improve the lives of BME people and maternal mortality rates. I would, in the workplace, I remember when I first started working, everyone thought I was a maternity support worker, and I love their work, and they are amazing, and they are key for teamwork, but I'd spent 3 years working really, really hard against the white system, against the tide of resistance to become a midwife. And I think that there needs to be, a better fostering of the assumption that we're all equal. I still don't think that's there. I think we need to flatten down the hierarchy, because the medical system is still based on the army. I really, 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 really want in the education, in all aspects of education, to acknowledge imperialism and colonialism and how that has still trickled down in our institutions and why they're still racist. We're not much better than the Americans. We really aren't.
No. It's becoming very clear now with some of the movements across the UK as well, Fatima. So I think I can see, and I can tell you, I'm watching news across Europe as well, and I watch a lot news in France and Belgium because I've got family there, and very, very similar points being made there about the history of France in the 19th or 18th century and how they need to move on as well, and some of the symbolism that comes with that as
it's
well.
It's funny you mentioned that, because my great-great-grandfather was executed by the French because he refused to hand over people in his county to build the Suez Canal.
Kenny, you wanted to come in and ask a question to Fatima or make a reflection.
I just wanted to add one more thing to the subject of what would like to see change. I remember vividly about the lecture that Professor Stacey Johnson gave at the Student Leadership Conference. She did talk about reverse mentoring. I think it's about time we begin to look at that as an important tool to change things in the healthcare sector, in practice and in education, because there are lots of people in position of authority that actually needs more coaching and mentoring. If we don't begin to work on changing things from that perspective, it might be very difficult to see the change that we are yearning for.
I know Stacey Johnson will be delighted to hear that, Kenny, but I'm also equally delighted because we had Stacey with us a couple of weeks ago, and we do have a podcast which is out there and people can listen to. And obviously reverse mentoring, I agree with you, is a very powerful tool. And I wish all vice chancellors in universities were embracing it, or all chief executives of NHS trusts and all the people in ministries as well. That would definitely help everybody reflect differently, particularly of some of the points Alicia was making around how important it is to use the research and the data and understanding the risks that we're taking by not understanding the population we serve. Margaret, your thoughts, final thoughts on what change you would like to see in the system?
Sure. Oh, first I want to thank Fatima, Kenny and Alicia, because I'm learning so much this afternoon, just listening to your experience as student, as black and brown people living in the UK, and your experience of being in the healthcare profession. Personally, I think I can only speak from a student perspective so far. Because of the COVID, my placement has unfortunately stopped, so I haven't actually been able to do client work after a whole year of my postgraduate study. In terms of university, I think I would really appreciate if there could be more support, not only moral support, but more funding in a way for student groups that are trying to support each other. For example, me and a few students from arts therapies courses are now leading a group called Diversity. So we have art therapists, music therapists, dance and movement therapists, and drama therapists. And we're grouping together to provide a safe online platform, a weekly meeting for all students who identify themselves as from an ethnic minority group. It has been very useful because during this lockdown period, it's not easy living, as all of you guys have mentioned, it's not easy living as a BAME community, individuals in this community. And it offers a lot of spiritual, psychological, emotional support to each other. And together we discuss topics like Black Lives Matters and how to get our voices heard in the faculty or in the broader university setting. I hope that university can, because we are very realistic in understanding that faculties might not have estimated funding for student-led groups like this, but we really hope to see more of that, and we really hope to see that not only in our university but across the UK. Another thing I want to say is that from an international student point of view, I'm from Hong Kong, so I can only speak about being for the Chinese ethnicity, that sometimes perhaps the lacking of leadership in the healthcare sector can also be contributed by social and cultural like perception on healthcare as profession, because like that could be a reason partly why there might not be as many international students coming to the UK to do like healthcare subjects, if that makes sense. And it's true that there can like Chinese senior leaders in other countries who are Chinese could have come to the UK to take a more senior role in, for example, like in the NHS. But I'm just like putting it out there. It could be a reason. So yeah, and this leads to my point that I think if possible, call me fantasizing, but university should definitely work with healthcare sector and governments, maybe even internationally, in rebranding healthcare as professions in order to like allow students at a very young age to understand better what allied healthcare profession, what roles there are, what they can achieve, and how important and how integral this sector is to everyone's life. You can't not go through illness, you can't not go through birth and death in your life. And therefore I think a bit it's just being aware of these topics might not be brought up that frequently, and therefore that is the gap where universities, government and healthcare sector should work together, should collaborate and promote more education in schools, in the public, in social services, and so that I think this could also address the recruitment situation in the healthcare sector. Yeah,
definitely. And I totally agree with you, Margaret, your reflection about the richness of the conversation, how much we're learning from each other. And I think my last point before I say goodbye and thank you to you all is very much around that. The more I think you've proven to us this afternoon that the more diverse the group, the better the thinking, the more rich the conversation becomes, the more perspectives you get, and therefore the more solutions, the more change you can see. So Margaret, Fatima, Alicia and Kenny, thank you all for being with us this afternoon. And I have to say, this is the beginning of a conversation. You will be back and we will be continuing and bringing some of the excellent points you've made today, hopefully to fruition in our sector. Goodbye and thank you.